Hello and welcome to the Australian Institute of International Affairs National Office. My name is Brendan Martin, and joining me today is the Honourable Kim Beazley, our National President and former Ambassador to the United States. Welcome, thank you for coming.
Well, great to be with you.
I guess where I would like to start off is at the AAA National Conference last week, there were calls for Australia to think about where we stand with the US in terms of the ANZUS alliance. And I guess my question is the strategic foundation of the alliance so shaky that it can't survive one erratic administration?
Well, of course it can. And that would be my argument. We do have a bit of a tendency in this country, and to a degree too in the US, to talk about the alliance as in somewhat almost spiritual terms. You know, it's a meeting of values, a meeting of minds. It's an expression of historical gratitude, but otherwise it's just a it's sort of formal part of our diplomacy. Actually, that's not the case. Nice to have that around, but sometimes that can be vulnerable if one or other side has got a sort of an unpopular prime minister or an unpopular president. It's more transactional than that, and it is deeply transactional. It has within its component parts and the intelligence side and the military side a deep, technically embedded relationship, which actually means that Australia can effectively defend itself at the point in which we're prepared to provide resources for the budget. And without the US alliance, that simply can't happen. And to replicate the advantages the Americans give us would require either a heavy deviation in the fundamentals of strategy over to, say, nuclear weapons, or an enormously expensive fit for the gathering of information, rendering the region transparent. It's not an either-or situation. The thing that strikes me since Mr. Trump has been elected as president is that a whole variety of people who have in the past anyway said that we shouldn't be in the alliance and we should focus on the region, whatever that means, are basically still saying the same thing, only with a president vastly less popular here than President Obama has been. So it's the same people saying the same thing. But the people who are supposed to be the beneficiaries of our sudden increase in attention, and they've got our attention anyway, would be saying to us, listen, there's a lot of questions around this new administration and a lot of directions which we can't live with. How about doing us a favour, given that you've got the best relationship with the US, and actually advocating our cause?
That's it. And, you know, I'm glad you brought up nuclear weapons just now. One of the most alarming things of the Trump campaign was, you know, he proclaimed that it was time perhaps for Japan and South Korea to develop their own nuclear capabilities. And, you know, Australia has a long history in the non-proliferation movement. How important do you think it is for Australian diplomats to engage with Japan and South Korea in an attempt to avoid that scenario?
Well, what a bad thing it would be, wouldn't it, if you take our three top trading partners, Japanese, the Chinese, the South Koreans, all of them then nuclear armed, with North Korea putting them all on a hair trigger. So we would have the people on whom we're most economically dependent in the trade area in a situation where anything could go wrong. I'm pleased to see that the president has apparently walked back from the position where he was effectively expressing indifference to whether or not South Korea and Japan became nuclear powers. But, you know, one of the problems, when you let a genie out of the bottle, it tends not to get put back in. And not so much so with the Japanese, but you'd have to say there'd be forces in South Korea now seriously thinking of that, irrespective of what the US might now say about extended deterrence.
From your experience in the Foreign Service, how difficult is it going to be for State Department officials serving in embassies, particularly in countries where the rule of law is not strong, where democracy has not taken hold? What's their job going to be like explaining the new administration to their relevant countries?
Harder.
Harder?
Yeah, okay. Won't be. There is a certain shock around the globe at the outcome of that election. There's a sort of one of the disadvantages, everybody likes a bit of certainty, even if the certainty is not very palatable. But there's an enormous amount of things unsaid about the direction in which Mr. Trump would take the American global position. You really don't know, because his argument essentially in this campaign was about domestic matters. And insofar as it entered into the international, it was all exclusively around trade, basically. So there's and he has no track record of an international engagement. And the people he's considering for the senior foreign policy and national security posts could take the US anyway.
Yeah.
And so totally, you know, a Romney Secretary of State would mean basically standard pat Republican outlook international politics. But you put in a Giuliani or a John Bolton and you're going in directions unknown. So all these things are up in the air at the moment, and people are understandably nervous, and nobody would be more nervous than American diplomats trying to work out what they're going to have to convey.
That's it. And that uncertainty that you speak of, you know, especially when it comes to these appointments that are talking about being filled, and it seems like every day the news is breaking some new, oh, this person is being considered for X, and the world gasps, I guess. When President Trump is inaugurated, he'll have a unified government, the first one that the Republicans had since 2004. Yeah. What are the House and Senate Republicans going to be like? Are you going to see the same sort of, breakaways that you saw when they were in opposition? You know, they were giving John Boehner a lot of problems. Or are they going to sort of come behind a Trump, approve all of his cabinet secretaries and...
Well, they all have their own mandate.
Yeah.
You know, they've been elected too, as Mitch McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate, was keen to point out to those who felt that he was not being so vociferously cheerleading about the Trump agenda. Look, I think you're going to see in this environment where there's a bit of weakness at the centre in general policy terms, you're going to see the House and the Senate seize a fair bit of authority. And they, after all, do initiate and control the budget. So obviously Mr. Trump will have views to express to them, but on the whole they'll see themselves as in control of that. And then it'll depend somewhat on the skills of the cabinet ministers that he appoints. If they've got widespread public credibility, then the folk in Congress will take a lot of notice of them. If they haven't, they won't. So I think you're going to see a pretty powerful House and Senate. Their big problem's going to be this. They've been elected essentially on Tea Party principles for the last few elections, in which they've beaten their chests about not allowing the Democrats' profligacy on the spending front or deficit front. All of a sudden, they're confronted with a Republican administration. And they recollect their last performance when George W. Bush was in office, which was pathetic when it came to budget management. And they're embarrassed about the fact that they were so completely pathetic. And now they're facing the situation where they've got another bloke, like George W., who's a huge spender and a huge tax cutter. And basically, I think they're going to drop their trousers. And I think they will probably err on the side of being supportive, and that's going to make them feel very bad about themselves. But if you look at the costings on the two programs that were offered to the American people last time round, I think Hillary Clinton increased the deficit over 10 years by about $250 billion, Donald Trump by $3 trillion. So he would lift, if his program is put in place, he'll lift the debt to GDP ratio of the United States from 74% to 120%. This will be modestly spectacular. But the people with the drop on it are the Republicans in Congress. So expect dissonance, confusion and difficulty at the nub of this.
More of the same, somewhat.
No, a different dimension,
okay.
but disagreement, yes.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, no worries.
For more news and analysis, don't forget to visit internationalaffairs.org.au and follow us on Facebook. Thank you.